Chapter 17.
Alex?
Zoe murmured, and moved into my line of vision so I would snap out of my swirling thoughts.
Are you sure you're okay?
Hmm? I blinked and focused on her sapphire blue eyes staring back at me in concern. What?
The cannon for the sharing of the mead went off,
Zoe said, as she placed the back of her hand against my brow again.
You feel a little warm, but not like before.
I'm okay, kitten, I promise. I reached up and took hold of her hand so I could kiss her knuckles, but she only frowned in response, so I laughed and kissed her actual cheek instead. All right, I think I overtaxed myself a little back there. Good thing you conveniently had those gobas on hand. Aside from being a bit groggy, I really am fine.
What overtaxed you?
She asked with a curious head tilt as her ears perked. The weird time trance thing, I frowned as I scratched my head. That was another perplexing thing that threatened to suck me back into the world of contemplative distraction, a.k.a. obsessive existential drain circling, which Zoe just pulled me out of. Not only were Sevik's vague illusions about his mysterious mercenary boss super threatening, but the fact the dead auctionee was apparently a renegade duelist in disguise was both disturbing and intriguing at the same time. And then, add on top of all that the fact I just fucking traveled back in fucking time! And it was a buttload of a lot to process for a minute, thank you very much.
What are you talking about?
The concerned expression on Zoe's face only grew more alarmed, and she took a step back as if she needed to scrutinize me from a wider angle situation to establish just how I grew a second head.
I didn't notice you do the time trance.
What do you mean? I asked. One minute I was on the ground, with him almost on top of me, and then suddenly we were standing across from each other again.
You were never on the ground,
she said.
You ducked and rolled through his legs and then tripped him.
Not the first time, I said, and Zoe's pupils contracted.
Mr. Alex?
Velralla approached us with her hand tucked firmly in Bowden's. How you doing, Vel? I asked, but I nodded at my wife in acknowledgement that our conversation wasn't over. Far from it.
I'm shaken, but all right, thanks to you,
the cockatoo woman said, and then she made eye contact with Zoe and the two raccoon brothers.
To all of you.
How's your wrist? I gestured to the way she was holding her other arm close to her chest.
I'll be okay,
she said, and flexed her fingers. I'll make sure she gets it seen to, Bowden interjected. Thank you, I said. I think you need to take the rest of the day off so you can rest. You've been through a lot recently.
But what about the stall?
She asked. I'll take care of it, miss, Mel said and patted her shoulder. Alex is right, and you've had a terrible shock. Let my brother escort you back to Icarian so you can rest before the ball.
You wouldn't mind?
Vel bit her lip. Say no more, miss, Mel graveled out, and gave her a kind smile like the diamond in the rough he was. I'll see you later, Bode. Thanks, Mel, the taller raccoon man said, and nodded at his brother before he went off back to the vendor stall with his quarterstaff slung over the back of his shoulders. Where'd you guys get those, anyway? I gestured to the weapon on Mel's retreating back. We exchanged our ramshackle melee weapons for a pair of Lenian strikers on our way, he explained. Well, speaking of, I'll need to make a trip back to that nice stall owner so I can pay for him. But you're sure you're all right? I questioned, when Vel continued to stare at her feet. What were they trying to get from you anyway?
They thought I might know why their colleague was trying to bid on me in the first place,
she explained.
Apparently, the man, Krev, was only supposed to go to the auctions as a spy, but then he went rogue when he actually placed a bid. I thought at first it might have been something Gordo was mixed up in. He often had underhanded dealings with the mercenary clans, but the leader never mentioned him.
Which clan were they from? Bowden asked.
I don't know, but I saw they all had the same brooch on their cloaks.
Vel squinted her eyes as if she was summoning the image in front of her.
It looked like an ugly knot of weeds with spikes all over.
I've heard of them, the raccoon man said and rubbed his chin. They're called Clan Thorn, and they hate duelists more than any other clan.
I've put you in terrible danger, haven't I?
She sighed and stared back down toward the ground. Vela, I intoned. This is no fault of yours. At this, the cockatoo woman met my eyes again, and her expression seemed deeply conflicted.
I'm sorry. I'm still just coming to terms with the fact you came after me,
she admitted.
I thought that was it for me.
Of course we came after you, I said. You're part of the crew.
The crew?
She ventured. You're one of us, I chuckled and patted her on the shoulder. I keep telling you, I don't leave anyone behind.
I guess I still feel undeserving of your kindness, after how awful I used to treat you,
she said as Bowden wrapped an arm around her shoulders. That's in the past, I reassured her. And besides, if you don't feel deserving, just remember you're not freeloading or anything. If you need a reason to feel worthy of belonging to this ragtag gang, remember how awesome your stall is. You're incredibly useful, and if you can sell like you do all the time, Brightwood Estates will need someone to manage its various successful enterprises.
Manage?
She queried.
I would have a say in what and how we sell things?
Yes, if that's what you want, I said. I don't know anything about marketing or sales, so if you want the job, you got it. You're already killing it as it is, so if it helps, think of our arrangement as mutually beneficial. I'm not taking you in because of charity. I even told you that before the auctions. If you're Team Brightwood, all that's required of you is hard work and, like, don't be a jerk.
You can couch your words in logistics and practicalities all you want, Alex Brightwood, but I know the truth. Other Ashers wouldn't have a second thought about replacing one of their disappeared servants, much less going after them to bring them back.
Vel reached out with her good hand so she could clutch one of mine.
You are a kind man. A good man. Thank you.
Get some rest, Vel, I said as I squeezed her hand back. Alex, Bowden nodded and gave me a grateful smile. And finally, Zoe and I were left alone as the conscientious architect led his lady love away from the dead man who'd tried to kidnap her. Come on, Zoe, I said as I grimaced. Let's get out of here before Big D starts to smell.
Do not think I have forgotten what you told me about your time trans husband,
she said, even though she let me lead us through the tightly wound alleyways. I wouldn't expect you to, I grinned at my clever wife. But she only arched an unimpressed eyebrow, so I slowed to a stop before we made it to the crowded thoroughfare. Look, all I can really say is that the time trance took me over again, but this time, instead of time slowing down, I don't know, it was like time reversed for a second. And I was back in front of Deros before he charged at me. You don't remember that?
No. You were standing there one moment and applying a combination of takedown moves the next,
she said, and her ears flicked atop her head as she narrowed her sapphire-colored eyes.
I didn't even see the blur around you that typically indicates you evoked your powers.
There's a blur? I questioned.
It is faint, but I can detect it if I look hard enough,
she smirked. I love it when you look hard at me, baby. I teased so the creases of concern would finally leave her beautiful face. But her smile faded somewhat.
If it was as quick as you say,
she mused,
it is worrying you expended so much energy all at once.
What do you think it is? I glanced out at all the happy festival goers milling around in their tree costumes, and I tried to find the origin of the delicious scent I could suddenly smell.
I think whatever power you tapped into must be used sparingly, if at all,
she said gravely. And she tugged me over to a vendor selling something that looked like green corn dogs and smelled like I needed at least 1,000 inside me right fucking now. To her credit, Zoe ordered 7. 1 for her and 6 for me. It wasn't until after I'd come up for air on the 5th skewered snack that I could actually focus on something other than the ravenous emptiness gnawing inside me. Mercedes, I said as I glanced down at the last Shrek sausage thing. Now that I'd slowed down, I was pleased to register it mostly just tasted like pork belly combined with maple. Whew, I was hungry.
You were overexerted,
Zoe reminded me, and held my chin so she could look into my eyes again.
Better.
Hey, I said, and I gently nudged the Shrek-sickle she still held and had yet to actually take a bite of because she was worrying about me. I know I scared you back there, but I promise I really am fine. I'll just make sure not to do any timey-wimey stuff until I can at least get a good night's rest.
Okay.
She sighed and finally nibbled on the sausage.
We will have to test out this new level of your powers in a more controlled environment in order to better understand it.
But that's in the future, I said, and dotted her nose with my finger. For now, let's finally enjoy ourselves, huh? I heard there's some sort of bitchin' festival going on.
You are right, my husband.
She giggled.
We should hurry back to the square. I'm sure Jenner's in conniptions about our whereabouts by now.
Oh, shit. My shoulders fell when I remembered how he expressly ordered all of us to be back by the time the cannons went off before the sharing of the mead. Oh, he's going to be steaming mad. Do you think I could take my chances with Deros again?
We'll be fine,
Zoe said, and disposed of our skewers before she tugged me to her so she could nuzzle under my chin. What's all this? I teased and held her close.
Husband?
My affectionate catwife purred against the shell of my ear. Yes? I rumbled low in my chest.
Catch me,
she whispered, and she nipped my earlobe with her sharp teeth before she spun around and zipped off through the crowd. Run, kitty, run, I growled and raced after her. I could tell she was pulling her punches a little bit, and I wondered why a second before my thighs started burning with lack of energy. As I slowed to a jog, I couldn't help but laugh at how this gorgeous and capable creature was one of the few people who knew me inside and out. I picked up a second wind at the realization, like my heart was buoyed by how in love I was, and I managed to catch her around the waist and spin her into a dip.
Alex!
She gasped, and I swung her back up into my arms and started to dance with her to the sound of a small street band playing on the corner. Caught ya, I said, as I turned us around in a lazy circle. But you let me win.
Maybe I don't want to run away from you,
she murmured and pressed her smooth cheek against mine. Good. I cupped the back of her head, and we finished out the song together just like that. When we finally made it to the big open-air plaza, we found Jenner near the giant vat of mead suspended over a bed of hot coals, and he was definitely fuming.
Mr. Alex, the koala man huffed. Oh, Mercedes, where have you been? You're both filthy. Are you hurt? I began to worry when...
Whoa, calm down, Cornelius, I said, when I realized what I took for his irritated pacing was actually him being worried about us. And I snagged a pretty bar waitress with a tray and took three tankards off her hands. We got waylaid because someone tried to mess with Vel, but we're okay.
Oh, that poor dear,
Jenner frowned.
Is she all right?
She's back at Icarian with Bowden while Mel is finishing up with the stand, I reported, and I waited for him to pull out his tiny notebook and pen. I told her to rest.
And the interloper?
He tweaked his monocle knowingly. Dealt with, I said, and handed him a tankard of mead half the size of his body.
Ah!
He snapped the notebook closed, stuffed it inside his inner coat pocket, and reached for the large mug of alcohol.
Well, I'm glad everything seems to be handled, praises be.
Zoe and I watched as Jenner guzzled a good amount of mead two-handed like an Oktoberfest champion, and I suddenly had the urge to see him in a pair of lederhosen and a little hat. How many of those have you had, Cornelius? I smirked with my own mead up to my lips before I took a sip of the sweet and yeasty brew.
Just two,
he said and wiped his upper lip.
Now, I have been told by our Madam Midi that I am unbearably overprepared for disaster, and as such I have procured a set of fascinators for the pair of you.
What now? I asked.
Headpieces,
Zoe said, and wiped off her own foam mustache as the tipsy koala man rummaged around in the box at his feet.
Like those people, there.
I followed her finger where she was pointing at a cluster of men and women all wearing headbands or hats, decorated to look like the jewel-toned trees of Yule. Awesome, I said, and I observed the milling tree crowd as one mass of moving and dancing forest. Jenner handed the headpieces to Zoe, and she put the one with the navy blue and black feather branches on top of my head. On her own, she then put on the one with spiraling royal blue branches that complemented her captivating eyes.
Oh, don't you look marvelous, the koala man chuckled. Now, let's make our way closer to the palace. The Fire Sky Show is about to start.
The rest of the crew, minus Vel and Bowden, were gathered around a small fountain where a pair of sacred fish spouted out water. All of them were wearing fascinators on their heads in various gemstone colors, and some, like Shay and the Mech Sisters, even had costumes with elaborate shoulder pads that also matched their tree hats. I feel like we're underdressed, I remarked, when Zoe and I sauntered up with our mead,
"Hello, darlings,"
Shay greeted, and my eyes tracked her body from the top of her vibrant red tree headdress to the gnarled branches sprouting from her epaulettes, to her swarthy gown the color of a brilliant sunset.
"You both are right on time."
"Dad!"
Ryland said, and I couldn't help but laugh at the singular green branch sprouting from his head like a who in Whoville.
"Hey, bud."
I flung an arm around his shoulders so I could give him a rough hug. "Did you spend all your gold?"
"Yeah," he grinned. "It was a man selling big legs of roasted meat, and I wanted to get two of them, but Uncle Oris said no, but it turned out to be a good thing because I threw up after nooner and I got done riding on the spinning rods, but I'm better now."
"Well, that's gross," I snorted.
"It was," he laughed. "Horace said he was amazed I could even hold that much."
"It's true," Horace broke in with a mock horrified expression. "Next festival, you can take him." I threw my head back and laughed as I clapped Horace on the shoulder. "Thanks for entertaining the Cretan while Zoe and I took care of some business."
"Everything all right?" he queried. "You should have seen Jenna. He was about to call a search party."
"Everything's been handled," I said, and we both watched Ryland regale Zoe with the same story he had just told me while his friend Nuna stood by and filled in here and there. "Hey, H, what do you know about Clan Thorn?" There was a beat where Horace froze, as if caught on the back foot. But the moment passed, and he cleared his throat.
"As much as anybody, I suppose. They are one of the four known clans on Nata, and they hate duelists. Standard."
Why do you want to know?"
"Why do you do that?" I asked him instead.
"Do what?" His eyes darted to the side for a moment before he willed them to stay on mine. "You get all flighty and weird if I ask you things about the mercenaries." I scrutinized his nervous behavior and replayed a conversation Shay and I had not too long ago in my head. "I know you were part of a clan and how possibly one of them helped you out when you were on the lam after we took out Dolar." The Falcon Man hedged and bit his lip. "Does this have anything to do with the Wolfman tribes?" I stared him directly in the eye.
"I can't say."
He sighed and fiddled with one of his fingerless gloves. "Can't or won't?" I challenged.
"Can't,"
he repeated, and the weight of his words translated a deeper meaning. "Like by magic or something." I gathered I was right when I saw him purse his lips. "Okay, but it's more than that, too. Last time the subject was brought up, you danced around it almost like you're protecting them. If you are, that's fine, but I'm asking you because I'm pretty sure I have a target on my back, and Clan Thorn has put it there. That is, if it wasn't already there to begin with." The Falcon Man gaped a few times in shock and swallowed thickly, but then he firmed his jaw as he seemed to come to a conclusion.
"I owe a debt to...
Horace paled and stopped as if some invisible hand was physically cutting off his words. "Hey, don't if it hurts," I said, and handed him the rest of my mead so he could take a drink.
"I want to tell you about
he croaked, and then took a swig of mead.
"Dark hell!"
"It's okay," I frowned in concern, and glanced up to see Shay looking curiously in our direction.
"I cannot break the vow of silence until...
The Falcon Man grimaced, as a faint sweat broke out on his face. But he shook it off and took another bracing drink of the strong alcohol.
"What I can do is put my ear to the wind. When I was mixed up in the clans, there was always a baseline of communal understanding, bartering and exchanging intel, that sort of thing. But Clan Thorn was the most mysterious and tried to isolate themselves as much as they could. Naturally, this made the other clans suspicious, and I do know Clan Thorn isn't completely invulnerable to mole mites and spies."
"That's all I ask," I said, and patted him on the shoulder, but I filed his concerning behavior away for later. "Now, what about this fire show I keep hearing about?"
"The Fire Sky Show is right before the sun sets, so any moment now," Horace said,
and we both turned our attention to the general merrymaking. The feel was similar to how I'd seen families celebrate the 4th of July in the past. Shay even had a big picnic blanket Amaya was helping her set up next to the fountain, and Anwar and Zoe were gathering more mead for anybody that didn't have a tankard, sans the kids.
Just a little one?
Rylan pleaded with Zoe, as he helped her pass two large mugs to Arvid.
They don't make them in little, little one,
she chided.
But you may have one sip of mine.
I laughed and snagged two mugs myself so I could hand one each to Shay and Amaya, who were still struggling with the blanket because they couldn't decide if they had it the right way around.
Are you certain this is the top?
The Oryx woman asked, and when she tilted her head, the turquoise leaves she wrapped around her silver horns tinkled lightly.
Well, now I'm not so sure, because the coarse stitching on the other side is quite fetching,
Shay said diplomatically. Pick the side that's most comfortable, I shrugged, as I added my less than 2 cents on the subject of throw blankets.
Whatever you do, pick quick, because the show is going to begin,
Anwar commented with a blasé expression as she played with the dark purple vines twining around her impressive ibex horns. Sure enough, a loud whistling noise pierced the air, and a rocket the color of molten gold streaked across the rosy twilight sky. Vendors stopped what they were doing and closed up their stalls. Minstrels packed away their instruments, and people ran around trying to find a place to settle in before the show started. The crew and I all piled onto the rumpled blanket and all sprawled out in a chaotic yet comfortable mess that made my heart and lungs feel full with how easygoing it was. Another rocket, black this time, was shot off from the palace, and a hush fell over the square all at once, as if this was the cue for the next phase of the Mid-Crescent Festival. It was so quiet that the sound of the singing forest could be heard drifting over the rooftops.
And now, the crescendo,
Zoe whispered into my ear, as her silky tail wrapped around my wrist. Like the title implied, the voices crescendoed through the night like the beginning of Carmina Burana, while the palace launched what seemed like the finale of their fireworks show all at once. The sky really did look like it caught fire, and despite the overlapping booms threatening to render me deaf, the singing never faded into the background, but instead burrowed into my soul like it lived there. Overall, this effect, combined with the deep percussion of the fireworks, raised the hair on the back of my neck and left me breathless with exhilaration. When it was over, I couldn't help but jump to my feet like everyone else and add my thunderous applause to the smoke-filled sky.
Asha Brightwood!
A voice that rumbled like the depths of the earth said from behind me, and I turned around to see a tall man with the features of a T-Rex staring at me. His big square head was cocked slightly to the side as if it was difficult for him to focus on me with both eyes at the same time.
How did you find your first Mid-Crescent Festival?
I remembered what Mech told me about the weird greeting ritual Terrans did because they were paranoid based on the way their eyes were positioned, and I tried to remain in sight of the imposing man out of respect, because I knew exactly who this was. And I knew it was time to summon the Alex who fake knew how to rub elbows with high society. My favorite. I smiled and turned up the charm.